Hello everyone, and welcome to today's Austrian Wine Time Masterclass with Paul D and with partner in love and business, Romana. My name is Antoinette Landejean from Cork and Fork in Washington, D.C. We are a premium wine store founded by a multi-generational flying winemaker originally from Champagne, France. I'm delighted to introduce today's producer, Paul D. At the age of 16, when Paul was still a student and with the support of his mother, he leased his grandparents' farm. Since then, he has managed the farm alone to much acclaim. Initially, the farm consisted only of 35 hectares of agricultural land and 4 hectares of vineyards. Paul expanded the farm by 5 times within the first 10 years. After only 2 years, he started exporting his wines to the United States. Paul graduated with a degree in viticulture and enology, as well as in agriculture. For those joining us live, we'd love to hear from you. Place your questions in the Q&A and we will get to them, time allowing. Since our guests are joining us live from Austria, quite a few hours ahead of us here in the United States, we will move immediately into the presentation. First, we will pass the microphone over to Klaus Wittauer, importer of the fine wines of Austria for the past 2+ decades. Klaus, please, if you would like to introduce yourself in this beautiful winery.
Well, thank you very much, Antoinette, and I'm happy to be back. And Nick, I see you on as well, and I want to welcome Paul and Romana to this Monday afternoon tasting here in Washington. And like Antoinette said, a few hours ahead in Austria, they already had the whole day behind them. So hopefully you already had a glass of wine. So cheers to you guys in Austria. I'm gonna I'm gonna take over the screen here and show a little bit of a PowerPoint, and we are going to try to go in to a little movie, which kind of Paul wanted. So let's watch this first, and then I'm gonna bring in Paul and Romana from Austria.
Wanted.
Hello. My name is Paul D. Ridden. Welcome to my winery. I'm a wine grower in the heart of Europe and Austria. Here in Lower Austria, we have a very strong wine tradition. Nature gives us all that we need to produce brilliant wine. Plus, soil, sun, rain, time, and of course, a lot of love guarantees different types of wine. After growing wine, the process of production starts. We keep our wine for months in tanks and balance the taste with long traditional work.
It's very fresh.
Our knowledge mixed with modern technology helps us to create tasty wines, which we fill up in bottles. Hopefully also for the next generation. Here on the deep plus of the Wagram grows the special fruit to Grüne Veltliner, Riesling, Zweigel, and a lot of other grapes. After a long day, try a glass of my wine with some friends. It's fantastic to serve with good food like fish or meat. Different sorts of wine for different food. You will love it. Try it, enjoy it, post.
Every place you place, hold you in my heart. This is what it meant to be. Don't use it.
Excellent. So, here you guys are. Come on and talk to us.
Hello, first from Austria, I'm Paul. This is my wife, Romana. And we are lucky to see us this year on the presentation, our winery.
Here on the picture, you can see Paul and me. We are sitting on the famous Schlossberg here in our village and enjoying some good wine, of course. Yes, Paul and me, we are married since 2018, so almost 3 years. And we have 2 children. I am a teacher in a secondary school, but of course I also have helped Paul in the vineyards and in the cellar, of course. Yes, and when I met Paul, I directly attended a winery school, and I also did my tractor license.
Let's go right into the tasting to our first wine. We have three wines chosen for you today to taste. And this is Paul a few years back, kind of when I was first coming into his cellar. He was probably not old enough to drink wine in the US, but he was already producing wine in Austria. So let's start with the Riesling. And this is when I tasted the Riesling last year for the first time. So Paul, tell us a little bit about your Riesling.
Yeah, our Riesling are growing in the on the deepless soils, not on the Donnerschotter. And it's very fruity, like peach and apricot. And this year we have a nice residual sugar and acidity balance, I think. And yeah, these are the points.
Yeah, Nick, I think you sold it all already, right? There's not much available. We have very, very little of this wine. Isn't that correct?
Unfortunately, Paul has created a whole bunch of diehard fans about this wine in the United States. Ever since they tasted it, everyone looks forward to it every single vintage. So I'm happy that we get a little bit. I can't wait till we get more.
Well, there's not much more left. You know, Riesling is not the biggest grape grown on the Wagram, and we're going to try to search if we can get some more for next year. But the 2020 vintage is a very tiny, tiny little vintage. Here is Paul. When I first met him, this was, you know, quite a while ago. He was, I think, 17 years old. This actually was the harvest of, this is when he was 17. The other one was the picture when 2010 harvest. And when he first sent me this little picture, I knew this young guy had already plans to be big in the United States, because he sent me this really cool, like I thought it was, you know, going to New York right here to the museum. And here was our first presentation we did at one of my buyer trips, when his mom was still doing most of the talking for him, but he made delicious wines for us already. And his mom was telling me that Paul's first name was not Mama or Papa, so Mom or Dad. His first word he was speaking actually was Traktor. Because he used to go out to the vineyards with his grandfather. And you will, as you saw in the movie, his daughter is now also going out on the tractor. So the next generation is already taken care of. And Paul doesn't just have small tractors. Like he mentioned, or Antoinette mentioned in her intro, that Paul also has an agricultural farm. Paul, what are the things that you're growing? This tractor you don't use for wine, don't you?
No, we have agriculture, Klaus said. We plant sugar beans, beets and soya beans, sunflowers and wheat, corn, pumpkins, and a lot of more of
Yeah. The sugar beets, I think you used to sell them to another big Austrian company who sells a few little cans of what's called Red Bull. Some people may know that this is an Austrian company, that little energy drink. But I drink wine for my energy. Riesling is kind of what gives me the energy. Yeah, the Wanted can right here. Nick is holding them up. I'm going to get there. This is my brother, actually. One summer we were in Austria and we took a little bike trip and visited Paul here. So a little geography, so you kind of just know where we are located. Like I always say, Austria is east of Paris, a little north of Italy. We are very close to Vienna, about an hour northwest of Vienna. on the Wagram. It's like on the Danube, the region Wagram, and this is the home of Grüner, Veltliner, and of course Riesling grape. In the northern part of Austria, you see the Danube, second longest river in Europe, kind of coming into the Wachau Valley and then goes through Krems. And then after Krems, it comes into the Wagram. And about 4 or 5 miles north of the Wagram, you see this little village of Kirchberg am Wagram. And Paul's village is right next to Kirchberg in Mittelstockstall. And this is the Loes terraces of the Wagram. Paul is kind of a little bit on the top plateau. So we are able to produce really good value Grüner Veltliners because the vineyards are a little bit flatter on the top plateau going into the wine viertel. So the Tereda Kirchberg is the village right here. And then Romana was already telling us the picture they took is on the Schlossberg. Right when you sit at the winery, you look across, you see this hill called the Schlossberg. And I think there's a little history going back there, Romana, right? The Winkelberger estate. This doesn't exist anymore. They took the bricks down and built the town after the war because it was a little bit too expensive to keep an old castle like that, right?
That's true, yeah. This old castle, it was built in 1250, so a very long time ago. And it was excavated in 1820. Yes, and it was the castle was home of many different aristocrats. Good, yeah. And today the Schlossberg, it's private property of 3 winemakers, but everyone can visit it. And from the Schlossberg, you have an amazing view over the whole wine region, over the whole Wagram. Yes.
Yeah, when we usually come and visit you, we kind of take a little walk up around the Schlossberg, and this is all Loes, and you're going to see another picture in a minute telling you this. And this is, you know, Paul's grandfather already had quite a few vineyards there, and his uncle, they kind of split apart. So they're the biggest landowners around the Schlossberg. And this is kind of the home of the Grüner Veltliner. Here you see on the left, you see the deep Loes, that sand, which it's not really sand, it's little small crystals, which was blown from the Alps during the ice time or after the ice time and was deposited there, especially along the Wagram. And here's the little hut up there where we usually do a little bit tasting, and it's a little walk, a little hike going up to the Schlossberg. And here you see a little picture of Paul decided to go into organic farming. So it's monoculture, but we're gonna see a little trees and things in between going into the organic farming process. And this is kind of on the back, this last picture down here from the winery. When you go out to the back, you see the church from Kirchberg. And this is just a beautiful a view. Where they live. I'm so jealous that you guys having, me being here in Reston and you living right there. But maybe there's a little room for me somewhere around here when I retire, eventually one of these days. And there you see a little picture again, how they used to grow, Christmas trees on the Schlossberg at one time and other things. But of course now it's all Grüner Veltliner grapes. And this is the flagship, Grüner Veltliner. That's Austria's main grape variety. About 30% of the vineyards in Austria are planted of Grüner Veltliner. And Paul, in your farm, it's also about, or more, it's about 50%, 60%.
Yeah, we have 70% of the grapes are Grüner Veltliner. And it's really the flagship and for me, the best grape in Austria.
And especially at your estate. And like I mentioned before, Riesling is only 4%. And most of the Riesling are actually in the Wachau Valley. And Paul has a little small plot of Riesling, which we're gonna try to grow more. And what's unusual is here on the Leader bottle, Paul makes this exclusively for myself. Anton Bauer, who is my partner in Austria, kind of searched him out as a, like you saw the picture, he was quite young when we found him. to make this project and make a leader bottle, because this is kind of a little, some of the top producers want to shy away from that size because it's considered as kind of the jug wine. The you know, many times in the United States, you'll see fancy labels, and then when you look at the back label, it just says plain Austria, or it's kind of purchased. They're using their big winery's name, but then they're buying inexpensive juice somewhere else and putting that in the liter bottle. And from the beginning, when I wanted to get into that segment, I wanted to make sure that I present a quality wine. Even so, in this liter bottle, for me to put my name on the label, it has to be something I can stand behind it, and also something I know it tastes all year the same. So it's not just like one time when I go to Austria and purchase a tank or something. If I sell this tank with Paul, I know that the second tank and the third tank tastes the same because it's all from one plot, from one winery. And here, Paul, I just have to tell you, you nailed it in 2020 again. So cheers and thank you. And tell us a little bit about the 2020 and this Grüner Veltliner you make for us.
Yes, the Grüner Veltliner in the summer of 2020, it was a little bit colder and rainier than the last summers before. And also during the harvest, the nights were cooler. This is why the wines of the vintage are more fruity and have the typical pepper note for me. And the alcohol is, I think, much lighter. And for me, it's, you can drink it better than the much more higher alcohol Grüner. And I think you can drink a bottle and it's good.
Yeah. I totally agree. Nick, you can come in here too. And like, it's not, you know, Austria, cool climate. In the last few years, 17, 18, 19, especially 18, got a little bit warm. And I would say 2020 kind of brings us back to where Austria in everybody's sommelier and wine geek's mind supposed to be. And this is supposed to be a 12% alcohol wine. We don't want a 14% alcohol wine for something you want to drink for lunch in the afternoon on a picnic, right? Because Nick,
I can't think of a better compliment to Paul's wines other than the fact that you easily can drink the whole liter without thinking about it, because it is just so refreshing, so easy, so balanced, and consistently year after year, Paul, you nail it. 100%, I qualify this as a lemonade type of wine where you just keep drinking because you're thirsty or it's hot or it's refreshing, or it just happens to be such a beautiful social wine that while you're hanging out with everybody, you always want another glass if somebody offers to you. And hats off to you for doing that so many times in a row, because it's clear it's not a mistake. You know what you're doing, and now people look forward to seeing your new vintage every single year because they always know they're going to love it. And it's like getting a present. Just how great of a present is it going to be that Paul made for us this year? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, this is one of the things also is because Paul focuses on this particular wine. It's not a second, or it's not something which is not good enough to go in his single vineyard. Okay, let's put that into the liter bottle. No, this is our focus. We really want to make sure that the quality of this wine is consistent, and it also represents the vintage and the grape. We don't want to make something different. We're not in the lab. We are not trying to please certain type of palates. It tastes like Grüner Veltliner. It tastes like the vintage, and that's what it should be. And that's kind of the only thing I tell Paul. I'm not a winemaker. I'm a wine drinker, sometimes a little bit too much, especially my wife is telling me now during this Corona time that I drink a little bit too much because she has never seen me that much drinking because I usually travel and now I'm sitting at home. By the way, on this liter bottle, you're getting one glass for free because you know there's 33% more wine in a liter bottle. So one glass is on me and Paul. We invite you to one glass on each bottle. And also, we have a really exciting thing happening. Here, you see, when the winemaker sends you a picture when he bottles the new vintage and smiles like this, you know it's going to be a good wine. This is what I got when Paul bottled for me the new vintage. Normally, I'm in Austria, and this year was the first year in many years where I was not able to participate in tasting the new vintage, but this picture showed it all to me that I have no worries that we're going to be in for another great, great year. And something else really happened was Paul really surprised me last year when he asked me if that would be something I would be interested in. And Paul, tell us a little bit about the Nachhaltig and your organic. Why are you going organic and sustainable?
Also, this year we started to be organic, and it's for me a reason for this chance was that we want to work with the nature and the natural way, and not with
artificial pesticides.
Yes, we will work with the nature and with the animals to be in a balance, and this is for me very important. And this sustainable Austria.
Sustainable Austria, yes, the certification.
Yeah, we have last year, and we are certified for ecology, economy, and society with the peoples, and they look in the vineyards that you have, that you work sustainable. And
well, it's the grape growing, it's the production, it's the vineyard, but then it's also how you treat your employees, that you also pay them fair wages. It's also how much you're supposed to participate a little bit in the town, in the region, to get tourism and be part of the whole town environment. It's the water management, it's how you use the electricity. So it's, to me, it is actually even more than just doing organic and using it as a little marketing thing. This is the real thing. And why are you doing it? It's because of the next generation, right?
Yes.
I think it's the blueprint though of what you can do as a small family winery with a history of going, to be profitable and be something that is going to be around for the future. If you take these steps, you ensure your success and you show everybody else how they can do it. For everyone who says we can't grow sustainable or we can't pay that wage, you know, you're showing everyone it's absolutely possible if you dedicate yourself to it, and it shows up in the wines. And for me, I always recommend your wines, both the Gruner and the Zweigelt that we're going to taste, like salt and pepper shakers, the things that you should always have on your table, because no matter what you're going to serve, your wines are going to bend and be kind to the food and really show them off. So, you know, hats off to you for taking these steps, because it really makes us happy to see that we're going to be enjoying Paul D. wines for a long, long time into the future.
And now you also even went to the next step. And even so, you're not going to be certified biodynamic, but basically you are in the farm becoming as a whole, and you have your own cows and kind of being total sustainable. You can totally support the whole growing of everything using the manure from the cows and everything. Isn't that correct?
Yes, we started with 4 cows and now we have 15 cows, and we are marketing to sell the meat in the region to make the people happy with good meat. And this is the
for me. And then the manure goes inside of these horns and you put it in the ground, and then the moon is correct, you bring it out, and then you take it into your vineyards, and the little next generation is already watching and be careful and paying attention to everything, doesn't she?
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. She is quite something. And Paul kept on asking me to go in there and help him take care of the cows. But trust me, Those horns look a little, they look a little scary. Even so, they all have names. What's their name, Paul?
This
is Bertha.
The brown one is Bertha. And this
is Arthur.
Okay. Well, Arthur was very, I mean, look at these horns. I was so scared of him. You know, look at them.
He's lucky.
Arthur is the chief.
He's the chief, boss. Yeah. And when I leaned a little bit too much forward, he let me know that he's the chief.
Yes.
And anyway, I did not step inside, and I have respect for them. And then I showed them my cans, because some of my American importers convinced me that we should put the Grüner Veltliner in cans, and my Austrian friends almost divorced me when we started doing that and said, how can you put Grüner Veltliner in a can? And I said, well, because the customers want it. It's a new generation, it's younger people. People go on the beach, people go on picnics, people go in pools, and you're not allowed to bring glass to pool. So here we go. We put Grüner Veltliner in the can. And trust me, this is the same juice as we have in the liter bottle. Down the road, it will be certified organic, sustainable, in the can. We won't put it on the can because people think it's a marketing scheme, but it will be. And when you open the can, it's a little bit spritzy, because what we found out, when you put wine of this quality and don't centrifuge it in the can and you close it, it's 100% airtight. So none of the natural CO2 can escape. If you look at a screw cap or a cork, some of the little CO2, which naturally is in the wine, can escape. In the can, it's there. So when you first pop it, or if you drink it out of the can, it almost has a little bit frizzante. It almost tastes a little sparkling. But if you put it in a glass, it disappears right away. That CO2 kind of blows off. And then it's just a bit more steely, a bit, because the wine didn't have time to age in the can. It couldn't, there's no air. So it's really straight. It's really fresh. I love to mix it sometimes with a little bit mineral water and make a spritzer, what we call in Austria, you know, 2/3 of a little Grüner and put a little bit mineral water on there. And, you know, if I have a rough day with lots of emails and a lot of customers asking me things, which they shouldn't ask me for, because I should say no, but I never say no. So anyway, then I just drink a lot of spritzer, because if I drink wine, then I would get a little bit nasty. With this, I still stay nice and happy. So Grüner Veltliner in the can. Antoinette, are you selling this already? I hope so. Nick, we got a few more cases, so let's push them out. We just did the next canning. So we got the new vintage already in the can. So let's put them out there and enjoy Grüner Veltliner in the can. We actually even did something else for the restaurants. Of course, unfortunately, with the COVID last year, we're sitting on a few of those kegs. But for wine by the glass, we actually put some Grüner Veltliner in kegs and have been quite successful, especially up in the Northeast. I think they're a little bit ahead of Washington. You know, Washington always has to look at the left and then the right, and then they still don't know if they should say yes or no. So it takes always a little bit more, a longer time for Washington people to get with the times. But those little restaurants and bars, Grüner Veltliner, tap wine, it's the future. And thank you, Paul, for doing all this for us and working with us, because it's not every winemaker is as easygoing as you are. And it's really fun. And that has to bring me to the next wine, unless Nick, you have anything else to say, or about Grüner or the cans or the cakes?
Everybody should drink them. It's the best packable thing, and it is a nice little smuggler. It fits in your pocket. It fits in your purse. So whenever somebody says it's not wine time, you can pull out your Paul D. Wanted can and say, aha, it is now.
Okay. And I guess, how are we doing with the time? Oh, I'm doing quite well today. We also have Zweigelt. This is the Austrian grape. It's called Zweigelt or Rotburger. That was the original name for it, because Professor Zweigelt was an oenologist who lived in Langenlois, which is very close to Paul's village. He originally was born in Styria, but then he settled up in Kloster Neuburg, which is a monastery outside of Vienna, right on the Danube. And it's one of the oldest wine schools in the world. And in 1922, he came up with this crossing. The Austrian government commissioned Professor Zweigelt to create a red grape, which kind of grows well in cool climate. We had Blaufränkisch is the main Austrian red grape, but it grows mostly in Burgenland, and it's a very late ripening grape. So it doesn't get ripe all the time, and you can't grow it in many parts of Austria. You really need a very warm vineyard site to grow Blaufränkisch. And then there's also another grape which grew quite well, and that goes back to the monks. And we don't really know if Burgundy had St. Laurent. Of course, now the French will never admit that they had this grape, but history goes back and forth that the monks brought Pinot Noir and St. Laurent to Austria. And then St. Laurent was the grape variety which really took place in Austria. And it was given the name St. Laurent because the grape kind of turns its color on August 10th, which is the Holy St. Laurent Laurentius, the Heiliger St. Laurentius. And on August 10th is when this grape changes the color. So it's an early ripening grape. And by crossing these two grapes, Professor Zweigelt kind of developed a grape variety, which at those times was quite important. If you look at the bunch here, it's a very high yielding grape. So, but it grows well all over Austria in many kind of sites where Blaufränkisch does well, but also where Pinot Noir kind of did well as well in cooler, in warmer areas. And now it's the second most planted grape in Austria after Grüner Veltliner. 14% of the vineyards in Austria are planted with Zweigelt. So of course, Paul and his grandfather and going back had quite a few Zweigelt vineyards. So when we started this project, I said, well, if we do a Grüner Veltliner in the Leader bottle, we got to do a Zweigelt as well. So here we go. Paul, tell us a little bit about your Zweigelt while I pour myself a glass.
Yeah. Yes. 2019, I think it was my best vintage. It was very hot. It's perfect for the red wine, I think, on the Vagra. And we make it typical, a classic Zweigelt. We harvest it when it is, the ripeness is very high. And then we give it 14 days in the steel tank for fermentation. And then we give it in the, we press it. And then we give it 1 year in a steel tank for ripeness. And then we fill it for the liter bottles for America.
Well, it's just classic, beautiful, no tannins. It's so soft. It's so round. It's so easy. I always like when Nick describes Zweigelt.
Zweigelt is one of my, coming from a background of loving Pinot Noir, Zweigelt was one of those eye-opening grapes for me, because you got the layering and some of the fruit effects that are similar to Pinot Noir, but there's always an added little spiciness or a juiciness to it that pushes towards that kind of Shiraz or Cote d'Aronne type of feeling that you get when you're drinking those wines, making it immensely food friendly, a great social wine once again. And I brought your wines to a giant wine tasting that I had in upstate New York to a bunch of people that had never even known about Gruner Veltliner and Zweigelt. And they were blown away. They were blown away by how delicious they can be and how much they instantly were attracted to this wine. So it's for anybody that loves Pinot, anybody that loves Rhone, and again, anybody that just wants to have a red that you could drink with everything.
Yeah, it's your perfect everyday red. I mean, just have it home. People come over, you pop this bottle up. It has this nice little screw cap, of course. If you don't finish it all, which usually never happens because it always finished, but you also can use this. It's a great cooking red wine. And, you know, you should never put something in your sauce which you would not drink. That's just a no-no. Just don't think a good chef will put bad wine in his sauce. So the same thing when you buy cooking wine for your have a little glass for the cook, make sure it's good. Maybe have a second glass because the dish will turn out better, especially if you're looking at a recipe. You get a little bit intimidated. So one or two glasses of wine will get that going away. So, you know, and then put that in the sauce, you know, like a nice short rib and put a whole bottle of that Zweigelt in there. And then I open another bottle for the chef while, because it takes 4 hours for it to braise. So, you know, it takes a lot of time. So this is just really, really good every day. Like Bill, like Nick just said, chill it a little bit. I put this wine an hour before this tasting in the refrigerator, and now it's perfect because it's that cherry. It's that really nice, soft, there's no tannins, fruit, but it's bone dry. There's no sweetness. And that's what's so nice, because a lot of times these inexpensive wines, sometimes they have artificial flavors added into it in this price point. So this is not, this is sustainable, organic, pure Zweigelt fruit from Paul's vineyard. And somebody's watching that he's also making this that way. You know, he has a boss at home, like I have a boss in my house.
Well, as you touched on, it's also wonderful as a chillable summertime red, because it doesn't fade away. It's not overly light. There's always a lot of character to the wine. And as we've talked about in some of these previous wine tastings, it makes a great pizza wine. Absolutely. In the summertime, whether you're barbecuing or ordering pizza, this is one of those go-tos that you can have. It's not trading down. So many wines that are red, you know, are great for the wintertime and with heartier dishes, but when it comes summer, you just can't drink them. And this is year round, whether it be the dead of summer, Thanksgiving, or even in the snowy months, it's always a joy to drink.
Yeah, Nick, I mean, all your restaurant friends and buyers, you know, I mean, this should be the happy hour wine in every restaurant, because, you know, when they serve these fruit bombs, people not going to order any food afterwards because they are filling up on the wine. But if you serve this Zweigelt, you actually want some food, because in Austria, you know, we do our big meal at lunchtime, but in the evening, what is called the Horriger, this is kind of a wine tavern where we serve cold cuts and meat and sausages and, you know, with like spreads and vegetables too. This is kind of the perfect wine that just be a talking and drinking. And if you have one glass too many or two glasses too many, it's not loaded with sugar. So the next day you're not going to have like, oh shit, I drank too much last night. No, you are fine. You are okay. You're just going to get up and go to work and be just perfectly fine when you drink this Zweigelt. So here we have Paul's entire portfolio. I know we don't do this today, but yesterday was Mother's Day. So I hope all the mothers got their roses. If you forgot it, just go to Cork and Fork or call me and we get you a bottle of Paul's Frizzante, which has the rose on the bottle. And that's where we're using the Zweigelt. and we infuse it a little bit with CO2 and make a sparkling rosé out of it. So this is another great way how to make the Zweigelt. And something else we are not tasting today, but you know, there's rosés from everywhere in the world. And with this Zweigelt grape, we dedicated a few vineyards where we actually make a rosé. So we're not trying to use and bleed off juice from this Zweigelt to make this more concentrated. No, we make the Zweigelt as the red Zweigelt, and we make a rosé from some of the younger vineyards, which we don't make a red wine from yet. And this is just a lovely, beautiful, dry rosé. I know, Nick, you got some in earlier this year and it's all gone.
I drank it, I admit it. I had a little bit of help. I sold a little bit to a few other people. Our good friend Pinky Rogers was responsible for taking down a whole bunch of cases, but that's just because, once again, it's the near perfect rosé, just the right amount of fruit, just the right amount of little dryness. And that little dryness at the end makes you want to go back for a second, third, fourth, fifth glass. And thankfully, it's the liter bottle. So if you go back for five glasses, you still have some left.
So I know Nick drank a little bit too much. And we have a little problem this year with shipping. Corona has brought us another, you know, the ships are just not going as quickly, or there's less people working in the ports. So we are a little backlogged. So even though we had a container who was supposed to schedule to come last month, has not even left Austria yet. And we are just not trying to, there's not enough containers available, not enough ships shipping them to the United States. So we're doing our best we can. Every bottle I have in the US, I'm going to try to scrape and bring down here to Washington and show you some. And now our next project, we're going to put this Grüner Veltliner also in cans, which I just, Paul, officially I'll give you the okay. Go ahead and do the first tank.
Oh.
Yes.
We make it. Huh?
So
it looks like you surprised Paul with that news.
I wanted to wait for a real good occasion. He just told me he just bottled the next 14 pallets of our Grüner Veltliner. So we are in good supply. Keep drinking and keep ordering. And you know, of course, if you have Wiener Schnitzel, anything, fried chicken works just as well, or fried calamari. Drink some Grüner Veltliner. It's just so good. It's anywhere. And soon I'm coming back to Austria, and I can't wait till we go. This is the beginning of our hike up to the Schlossberg. So here we have our reward when we get up to the Schlossberg. And the next generation is taken care. Paulina, damn, this girl is growing. How old is she now?
She's 3 and a half already.
A half, you just got married. I was at this beautiful wedding in this castle. Paulina was just so cute. And now, last year during the harvest, you also had somebody else arriving, Felix, huh?
Felix, he's now 7 months old. Yeah.
Wow, this was a picture. I think he was a day, right? This was the first
day. Yes, it was in the hospital. Yeah, he was one day.
And he looks so cute. And here we are. They're growing up. So
the next generation,
Felix, the next generation of Paul Dureda. I can retire. They will take care of me. I just, it's so great to become, to get old. But it's not that great sometimes. I just have to stay healthy. And that's what Paul does to me. He keeps me healthy and he keeps me young, because every year, actually this was the first year in like 10 years, Paul, where we have not been able to go skiing in my home village, Leogang.
It's the best work over the year to be skiing.
I mean, I love skiing. I'm born skier, and for somebody from the east of Austria, you know, we are Salzburg and Tirol people. we are a little prejudiced and we say the people from Vienna and Niederösterreich, how can they ski? They have never seen a mountain in their life. But let me tell you, let me show you.
Paul Di Reda, Salbach, March 2020, Schattberg.
New Year's show.
This guy is a good skier. Next year in this slope, they will have the world championship. And Paul, I think we should be there. What do you think?
Yeah.
My home village is right on the other side of this hill. So this is Saalbach Hinterklemm, and I'm from Leogang. And now for the last 12 years, Paul and I have skied every year except 2021. I was not able to go. This was kind of the last day before the borders closed. Remember, Paul?
Yeah.
We were putting together.
We are going next day.
And I was booking a flight during the night because my wife called me probably 20 times and said, the borders are closing. You need to come home. And I said, should I come home or should I stay here? And I was going back and forth, you know, I was like, you know, but I booked the flight and I came back to the US and now I got both my shots. I'm ready to go back out. I'm ready to come skiing to Austria. This is just such a great skier. So I'm going to take us off our PowerPoint presentation so we can see each other again. And Nick, if you have any questions to Paul and Romana, go right ahead.
Excellent. Well, it seems Internet. Like we may. Yes, yeah, for a moment. My connection is a little bit unstable, but yes, thank you so much. That was an incredible presentation and introduction to the estate. As we wrap up, Paul, Romana, Klaus, and Nick, any final thoughts to share before we say goodnight?
Who wants to go first?
I'll go. I think it's, again, Fast become one of my favorite wineries. If you haven't had Paul's wines, you definitely should go and try them. It's wonderful to see what he is able to do year after year with everything that goes on in the harvest to be able to be that consistent. It proves that he was a prodigy from a young age and that he knows what he's doing. And you're a veteran of, is it 15, 16? How many harvests now, Paul, have you done?
Wie viele Ernten hast gemacht?
This is the 15 vintages now this year.
So by the time Paul gets to that age when everybody else says they are.
No connection.
We lost you, Nick. We lost Nick for a minute. He was like putting together how many things he must be drinking too much. Nick, stop drinking. You're drinking too much Paul Di Reda wines. Here, you're back. We lost you, Nick, for a minute.
I'm still here, I promise.
Ah, okay, here you are.
It's better.
Now finish your sentence.
I just wanted to say thank you for always making great wines. I hope to enjoy them many, many years into the future. I know that every single time Klaus tells me a new vintage of your wines is coming, it gets everyone excited. And so I can't wait to see, and knowing how well you made a wine for your wife, I can't wait to see what you make wines for your children, because I'm sure they will be fantastic also.
I hope we see us in Austria.
Paul, Romana, I can't wait to come back to see you guys and really tasting the wines. I know we have a few projects in the pipelines and we'll make some more stuff. So in the meantime, I encourage everybody. I know Nick, you're working for an Italian importer. So tell Emmanuel, your boss, not to listen to what I'm saying now, but forget Pinot Grigio and drink Grüner Veltliner. That's the wine in the summertime to drink. And then for your barbecue, for your pizza, start drinking some delicious Zweigelt. And of course, rosé is in. Even big guys, don't worry. It's okay to drink rosé. It's fine. This is really delicious, dry Provence style rosé. Even I think Antoinette, your dad, likes it.
He absolutely does. It's a wonderful wine, and we're very honored when we're able to receive a small allocation of it. I believe we have a few bottles left on the shelf if anyone is interested in them. So thank you for joining us today, Paul, Romana. It was an immense honor and pleasure. Klaus and Nick, always a pleasure. And we'll be seeing you again later this week. For those viewing, we appreciate your interest in the great wines of Austria. We encourage you to visit our website calendar at corkandpork.co to view the upcoming Austrian wine events with some of the region's greatest producers, such as our guest this evening, Paul D. So once again, thank you very much. I wish everyone a lovely evening, and I will end the meeting.